Welcome. We're going to learn the second sicha of Parshas Maaseh in Chelek Yud Gimel. This is a Rashi sicha. Now, in the middle of Parshas Maaseh, there is a topic where the Torah starts spelling out and specifying all of the borders of Eretz Yisrael. And this is how this topic begins. It's in Perek Lamed Dalid. The pasuk says, Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, "Speak to the Jewish people, Tzavas Bnei Yisrael, command the Jewish people, Va'amarta Alehem, and you should tell them, Zois Ha'aretz Asher Tipa Lechem Benachala. This is the land that will fall to you as an inheritance, Eretz Canaan Legvulei Seha, the land of Canaan." To its borders. And the Torah goes on and spells out all of the borders of Eretz Yisrael, the north, the south, to east, the west. The Torah gets very specific. Now on this pasuk, there are two Rashis on this pasuk. The first Rashi, the Dibur HaMaschil, Rashi copies down the words of the pasuk. The Dibur HaMaschil is Zois Ha'aretz Asher Tipa Lechem V'Goymer. This is the land that will fall to you, etc. And Rashi explains, Lefi Shahar Be Mitzvois Noyagois Ba'aretz, being that many mitzvois apply in Eretz Yisrael, Ve'ein Noyagois B'chutz La'aretz, and do not apply outside of Eretz Yisrael. Hutzrich lichtoiv, the Torah needed to write, Mitzrane gvulei ruchaseha saviv, all of the outer reaches of its borders all around, loimer lacha, to teach you, min hagvulim halalu v'lifnim, from these borders and inside, meaning only in these borders, ha-mitzvah noya, mitzvahs noya guys, the mitzvahs apply. So Rashi is explaining the reason why we need to know the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. And the Rebbe asked three questions on this Rashi. I'm going to reorder the questions a little bit. But firstly, the Rebbe asked, he asked a question on the Dibur HaMaschil, right? Basically the title of the Rashi, the words of the Pasuk that Rashi is commenting on. And the Rebbe says, you would think that Rashi's Dibur HaMaschil would be the word L'gvulei Seha, to its borders, being that this seems to be the key word that Rashi is trying to explain. Rashi is trying to explain, why do we need to know the borders? So you would think that would be the Dibur HaMaschil. But instead, the Dibur HaMaschil, the words that Rashi copies down are Zois Ha'aretz Asher Tipa Lechem, this is the land that will fall to you, V'goymer, etc. Meaning, L'gvulei Seha, the borders, is only kind of hinted out in the V'goymer. Why is that? So that's one question on the Dibur HaMaschil. Another question, a second question that the Rebbe asks is on the actual content of Rashi. Rashi says we need to know the borders in order to know where these mitzvahs apply. And the Rebbe says Rashi is here to explain Pshutei Shel Mikra, like the most basic understanding of the Pasuk. You would think that the most basic understanding of this topic would be that you need to know the borders of Eretz Yisrael in order to know what to conquer, right? The Yidden have not yet conquered the land. So if Hashem's spelling out the borders, you would think the most basic reason would be, I need to know the borders in order to know exactly which land and which areas I need to conquer. Instead, Rashi chooses to bring a different explanation. You need to know the borders of the land in order that after you conquer the land, you'll know where these mitzvahs, the mitzvahs hatzlius ba'aretz, where the mitzvahs apply. So why is it that Rashi chooses this explanation? And the third question the Rebbe asks is, why does Rashi seem to be so wordy? And Rashi explains himself kind of at length. We know that Rashi is very, very exact and precise and deliberate in his wording. He doesn't just use extra words. Every word is there for a reason. So if Rashi, it would seem to be sufficient if Rashi would just say, being that there are many mitzvahs that apply in Eretz Yisrael, the Torah spells out the borders. The Torah tells us the borders of Eretz Yisrael. And instead, Rashi kind of says it the same idea two times and says the same idea at length. He says, being that many mitzvahs apply in Eretz Yisrael and don't apply outside of Eretz Yisrael, the Torah writes us all of the outer reaches of the borders in order to teach us that within these borders, the mitzvahs apply. So why does Rashi have to express himself at length like that? So that's the first Rashi on the Pasuk, and those are the three questions that the Rebbe asks on this Rashi. But there's a second Rashi on the Pasuk. Afterwards, Rashi copies down, as the Dibur Maschil, he copies down the words, Tipol Lechem, right, the land that will fall to you. And Rashi explains, Al Shem Sheneschalka Begoyrul, being that it is divided, the land is divided by a goyrul, by a lottery, Nikres Chaluka Lashenefila. Its division is called with this expression of Nefila, of falling. This expression, the idea of this lashon of tipol lachem, the land will fall to you, this expression of tipol or nefila, is an expression that is sometimes found when it comes to a lottery. For example, when Haman made a lottery and he cast lots, it says hippel poor, that Haman also, he fell, he made these lots fall. In general, when you make a lottery, there's kind of two parts to the lottery. First, you, I guess, write down all of the possible options or the names or whatever it is that you're raffling off. You write them on some piece of paper or wood or whatever you're using. You first put it down into a certain vessel. You put it down, and then you lift up. You lift up one of them, and that's how the lottery works. So you do sometimes see this word or this expression of nefila when it comes to a lottery, and that's why Rashi explains, why do we have this expression of tipa lachem? Because of the way the land is divided. The land is divided by a lottery. That's why we see this expression of nefila. And Rashi continues with another explanation. He says, Umedrish agada oimer. And the Medrish explains, Al yedei shehipal HaKadosh Baruch Hu sarehem shel shiva umos min hashamayim, being that Hashem made the sarim, the angels, the malachim, the angels of the seven nations of Canaan, Hashem made them fall, ukfasan from the heaven, ukfasan lefnei Moshe, and he made them bow before Moshe. Amarloi, he told Moshe, re'ei ein behem oid koyach, see, they do not have any more strength. In other words, what the Medrash is explaining, that by Hashem making these angels, the malachim of the seven nations of Canaan, fall and bow before Moshe, this was a sign, an indication that the nations of Canaan had been weakened and they would be easily subdued and conquered by the Jewish people. And this is another reason why the Torah uses this expression of tipol, the expression of falling, being that the sarim, the ministers or the angels of the nations of Canaan had fallen before Moshe. Right, so this is what Rashi is again trying to explain, the expression of tipa lachem. Why would we use this expression of falling in regard to Eretz Yisrael? And he gives those two explanations. Now the Rebbe asks two questions on this Rashi. The first question is on Rashi's first explanation, right? The first explanation about the goyrul. Why do we say the land tipa lachem will fall to you, being that it is divided through a goyrul? And the Rebbe says, why does Rashi need to give this explanation? You would think again that there would be a much more simple pshat, a much more simple or basic explanation to the words tipa lachem. The more simple or even intuitive explanation is that when Hashem tells you this is the land that will fall to you, it gives off the impression that this land will fall to you, meaning it will just fall into your hands. It will fall into your lap. I'm going to give it to you. You won't even have to do much to conquer it. It will fall into your hands. Why does Rashi not give that explanation? And instead, he gives some kind of more, he gives some other explanation about a goyrul. This land will be divided through a goyrul. The goyrul isn't even the topic that's being discussed over here in Torah. So why does Rashi choose this specific answer that we say tipa lachem because of the goyrul, if the more basic or intuitive answer would be that we say the land will fall to you, in other words, meaning it will just fall into your hand? And then the Rebbe asks, secondly, his second question is, why does Rashi need to bring a second explanation? Right, this is a basic rule that the Rebbe teaches us many times in Rashi, that Rashi doesn't just bring us a multitude of explanations, but Rashi, every explanation is here for a reason. If Rashi brings more than one opinion or more than one explanation, it is because the first pirush, the first explanation that he gave, that he brought, has some sort of problem or some sort of weakness, and the second explanation does not have that same problem. So why is it? What was wrong with the first explanation regarding the Goyru? What is what's missing in that explanation that Rashi feels like he has to bring an additional explanation from the Medrash? So far in the first two Oisiyos, the Rebbe brings down the two Rashis on the Pasuk, Zoy Sa'aras Asher Tipa Lachem, and the Rebbe questions, Rebbe explains his questions on these Rashis. Now in Ois Gimel, the Rebbe begins explaining that first Rashi of Zois Ha'aretz Asher Tipa Lachem the Goymer. This is the land that will fall to you, etc. Where Rashi had explained that we need to know the borders of the land in order to know where to keep the special mitzvahs. And the Rebbe explains as follows. He says, if the entire reason, the whole reason why we need to know the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael is only in order to know what to conquer, then all the Torah would have to say, these are the borders of the land. Right? These are the borders of the land of Canaan. But instead, right, and then these are borders of the land of Canaan, and then the Torah would go on to explain and spell out the borders of Canaan, and we wouldn't have any questions. Instead, though, the Torah adds some extra words. It doesn't just say these are the borders of the land of Canaan, but it says this is the land that will fall to you. To its borders, right? This is the land that will fall to you, the land of Canaan, to its borders. Being that the Torah chooses some additional words, Asher Tipo Lachem, brings in these seemingly extra words, the land that will fall to you, and these words give off a connotation. They give us the impression that this land will be given to us by Hashem. And it's not a land that you are going to go out and conquer and wage war, but this is a land that will fall to you. It will fall in your lap, meaning it's giving off the impression that Hashem will give the Jewish people the land. Hashem will help them, will give them supernatural assistance in order to be able to acquire this land and to conquer this land. Being that the Torah chooses to add these additional words that give us this sort of impression, then that's why we need an additional reason as to why do we need to know the borders of the land. Because you can ask, if this is a land that Asher Tipa Lachem, if this is a land that will just fall to the Jewish people, that will fall into their laps, that Hashem is going to give them with many miracles, then why exactly do they need to know the exact specifics of its borders? Hashem's going to give them the land. Why do they know? They need to know exactly where to conquer. And that's why, because of the words Asher Tipa Lachem, these additional words, we need to have an additional reason and an additional explanation as to why do we need to know the borders of the land. We need to have an explanation that is still relevant, that would still be relevant and would still apply to a land that is given to us by Hashem. The Rebbe says we also have there's also another additional question on this pasuk that we can have, that again, if the Torah is just here to tell us the borders of the land in order for us to know what to conquer, we would also have an additional question on the pasuk, which would be why doesn't Hashem tell this to Yahushua? Meaning Hashem should say, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, speak to Yahushua and tell him these are the borders of the land of Canaan, because after all, it's Yahushua that will be bringing Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Canaan, into Eretz Yisrael. He's the one that's going to be in charge of the conquest. And instead, we see that Hashem says to Moshe, speak to Bnei Yisrael. tell the Jewish people all of the borders of the land. The Jewish people, the majority of the Jewish people aren't directly involved in the conquest of the land. They don't exactly need to know all of the borders, exactly where they need to conquer. So again, if the entire reason for knowing the Gvulei Ha'aretz, the boundaries of the land, is just to know what to conquer, we would also question, why is Hashem speaking to all of the Jewish people instead of speaking specifically, instead of telling Moshe to specifically speak to Yehoshua? And that's why Rashi brings his explanation of, we need to know these borders. This topic is here because we need to know where the special mitzvahs, hatluyas ba'aretz, the mitzvahs of Eretz Yisrael, we need to know where they apply. And now, according to this, it would make sense why Hashem is speaking to Moshe to tell all the Jewish people instead of specifically Yeshua. Because again, we don't just need to know the borders of the land in order to know what to conquer. Hashem's telling us these borders in order for us to know exactly where the special mitzvahs and the special halachos of Eretz Yisrael apply. And this is something that is relevant to all the Jewish people, right? And just like when it comes to all of the other mitzvahs and all of the other halachos of the Torah, Hashem taught it to Bnei Yisrael through Moshe. They all comes through Moshe. So too, when it comes to the borders of Eretz Yisrael, which is necessary information that we need in order to know where to keep certain mitzvahs and where to fulfill certain halachas, also these borders are also said and given to us through Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, again, just to summarize, this idea and this explanation that the Rebbe gives in Ois Gimel actually answers the first two questions that the Rebbe had on this Rashi. It explains to us the reason, the significance of Rashi's Dibur HaMaschil, right? When we said, we asked question, why doesn't Rashi just copy down the word L'Gvulei Seho? I'm explaining to you the borders of Eretz Yisrael. And instead, Rashi copies down the words Zoysa Oretz Asher Tipa Lachem V'Goymer. So explanation we just gave explains Rashi's Dibur HaMaschil, and it also explains the content of the Rashi. It explains the reason why Rashi chose this explanation, that we need to know the borders in order to know where to keep the mitzvahs. Why is this? Because the words, it's specifically, Rashi chose this Dibur HaMaschil because it's specifically these extra or these seemingly extra words of Asher Tipa Lachem, the list is the land that will fall to you. It's these seemingly extra words that teach us, that give off the connotation that Hashem's just giving you the land. These words teach us that there must be another reason why we need to know the borders. It's not just about knowing where to conquer, but there must be this additional reason. And the additional reason is we need to write an additional reason that's relevant that's still relevant to a land which Hashem is giving to you. And this additional reason is that we need to know the borders in order to know where to keep the mitzvahs hatzluyas ba'aretz. So again, in Ois Gimel, the Rebbe explains those first two questions on Rashi, the significance of that Dibur HaMaschil, and the reason why Rashi chose this explanation and didn't just explain that we need to know the borders in order to know where to conquer. Now in Ois Dalid, the Rebbe explains he answers the third question on that Rashi, which was, why does Rashi have to be like so wordy? It seems like he's repeating himself and saying the same thing twice. And the Rebbe explains why Rashi is being so wordy. The Rebbe says, if Rashi would just write, according to this whole explanation that Rashi's giving, right, that you need to know the borders of Eretz Yisrael in order to know where to keep those mitzvahs, the mitzvahs hatluyas ba'aretz, if you could question a person, whoever's learning Rashi would have a question, why is it then that the Torah does not spell out the borders of Eiver HaYarden? We've already learned in Parshas Matos first in Parshas Chukas, how the Jewish people had conquered a land Eivor HaYarden, on the other side of the Jordan, the land of Sichon. And then in Parshas Matos, we've learned how he had a couple of Shvatim that settled in Eivor HaYarden. And that this area on Eivor HaYarden, right, at the other side of the Jordan River, became their land, became their actual Yerusha and their inheritance. So a person would ask, why is it that when you learn the borders of Eretz Yisrael, if you need to know where the halachas apply, why is it that when the Torah tells us the borders of Eretz Yisrael, it does not spell out the borders of Eivor HaYarden? Why is that? And the Rebbe says this is the reason why Rashi expresses, why Rashi is kind of more wordy, and it seems like he's repetitive over here. But what Rashi's trying to do is Rashi's trying to make very, very clear. Rashi's trying to make a certain point very clear. I'll repeat the words of the Rashi. Rashi says like this. He says, being that some mitzvahs apply only in Eretz Yisrael and do not apply outside of Eretz Yisrael, the Torah needs to write all of the outer borders of the perimeter of the land. Loyer Malacha to teach you that within these borders, only with, through Rashi sort of repeating himself and saying, only within, to teach you that only within these borders the mitzvahs apply, that is the way, in this way Rashi emphasizes that the mitzvahs, at least according to Rashi and according to Pshutei Shel Mikra, the mitzvahs hatluyas ba'aretz do not apply in Eivor HaYarden. They only apply within the actual borders of Eretz Yisrael that are spelled out in Parshas Masei, but they do not apply on the other side of the Jordan. They do not apply in Eivor HaYarden. Now, this is not necessarily what the halacha is. Halachically, this is much more controversial. There's a big differences of opinion regarding the halacha. But over here, Rashi tells us this because this is how it's learned in Pshutei Shel Mikra. Again, when you're just learning the basic understanding of the pasuk, we learn that the borders, meaning the mitzvahs of Eretz Yisrael, only apply within the borders that are spelled out in Torah and do not apply in Eivor HaYarden. So over here we've explained, the Rebbe has explained the first Rashi. Right? The first Rashi, Zoysa Oretz Asher Tipa Lachem V'Goymer, we asked three questions on it, and the Rebbe explained, he answered those three questions. In Ois Hei, the Rebbe begins explaining the second Rashi. And the Rebbe explains that once you've learned the first Rashi, you now have really a question on the words Tipo Lachem. Meaning, what we've already learned, based on what we've learned until now, we understand that the Torah adds these seemingly extra words. It says the land Asher Tipa Lachem, which give off the impression that this is a land that Hashem's just giving to you. Hashem, the Torah adds these words in order to teach us that there must be an additional reason, there must be a different reason why we need to know the borders of the land, a reason that's relevant even for a land that Hashem gives to you. Okay, we understood that. But now we have a question. We want to understand the specific expression of Tipo Lachem, the land that falls to you. Because Tipo Lachem, right, the land that falls to you, it kind of has a bit of a negative, connotation to it. It's a connotation of Nefila, to fall, to descend, to fall. We're talking about such a holy land. We're talking about Eretz Yisrael, the most holy, unique, special land. We're talking about a land, right? This is a land that Hashem gives to the Jewish people, and a land that's so whole, that's so special, that's why we have additional unique mitzvahs that apply specifically to this land. Why are we using an expression that connotes nefila, an expression of falling in reference to Eretz Yisrael? Because you can use a different word and a different expression that will kind of give off, have the same sort of effect. This is a land that Hashem gives us. There must be a different reason why we need to know the borders. You can use a different word that would have the same effect. What word? You can say, Zoysa Oretz Asher Tokum Lachem. This is the land that will be established for you. And Tokum can also mean to stand up or to lift up, like it has this connotation of something that is elevated. So, okay, I understand the Torah gives us this additional phrase in order to give off the impression that this is a land that Hashem will give you. But why use the negative expression? Why say tipa lachem? You can say takum lachem. You can say a more positive word that would have that same effect. So now that's where you have the second Rashi comes to explain. So you have an additional Rashi. Rashi copies down the words tipo lachem, right? He's trying to explain, why does the Torah use this expression of nefila, of falling? Why does the Torah use an expression which can be a bit negative in reference to Eretz Yisrael? And Rashi answers, his first answer is, El Shem Shenishalka Begoyrul, being that it's divided through a goyrul, through a lottery, Nikres Chaluka Lashon Nefila, this division is called, right, we use the expression of Nefila. We use this expression of falling. Meaning, what Rashi is trying to explain is that when we say Ha'oretz Asher Tipa Lachem, this is a land that will fall to you, it's not that this expression of Nefila, falling, is not related to Eretz Yisrael as a whole. That Eretz Yisrael, that the land itself, is associated with the word Nefila. That's not what the Torah is saying. The word Tipa Lachem, this expression of tipol, of falling, is only in reference to the goyrul, is only associated to the actual goyrul, the lottery, which was used in order to divide the land. But it's not that the land itself and the land as a whole is really connected to and associated with this expression of nefila, the expression of tipol lachem. So that is the first explanation that Rashi gives. Again, we have this explanation. Okay, I understand we need this like extra phrase. The Torah is giving us this additional phrase to teach us something. But why do we need to use this negative expression of tipo, of nefila? And Rashi explains, it's not that the land itself, this special holy land, is associated with falling, with tipo lachem. It's just the division of the land. The way the land was divided, it's the goyrul. It's only the goyrul that's connected to this expression of tipo lachem. But we see that Rashi does not suffice. He's not completely satisfied with this answer. And he brings an additional answer from the Medrash. And here the Rebbe explains the second question that he had on this Rashi. What was wrong with the first answer? Why does Rashi need to bring an additional answer? And the Rebbe says there were two reasons. The Rebbe gives two questions that you can have on this first explanation of Rashi. There are two reasons why the first explanation does not suffice. Meaning Rashi says, why do we use the expression tipa lachem, this expression that the land will fall to you? We use this expression because of the goyrul. The land is divided. The land is divided through a goyrul. So the Rebbe says, what are the two kind of weaknesses or the two questions you could have on this explanation? The first question is that firstly, the whole concept of the goyrul is not the current topic. It's not what the Torah is currently talking about. The topic right over here in Parshas Maaseh is how the land is the borders of Eretz Yisrael as a whole, the borders of the entire land of Eretz Yisrael. The goyrul, on the other hand, and the lottery was the means and the method through which Eretz Yisrael was further subdivided into portions. So this topic, this actual topic of the borders of Eretz Yisrael, isn't particularly related to the whole idea of the goyrul. And secondly, even if the Torah wants to allude to this goyrul, to this lottery, there is a more positive expression that it could have used. The Torah could have said, Zois ha'aretz asher ta'ale lachem. This is the land that will come up to you. This expression of ta'ale is also an expression that is sometimes used in reference to a goyrul. It's a more positive expression because it means it will a land that will come up, to be lifted up, to be elevated. And it would seem to be a more fitting and more appropriate expression. It would seem to be a better choice, so to speak, for the Torah to have used this expression, Zoysa Aretz Asher Ta'ale Lachem. Because first of all, this expression of Ta'ale Lachem was already used in the Torah in reference to a goyrul. We're familiar with this word in reference to a goyrul. When the Torah talks about the avodah of Yom Kippur, the whole everything that's done in Yom Kippur, and the goyru that's done in Yom Kippur, it uses this specific word, the word of tala, this word of tala. Also, additionally, when it comes to the goyru, the tala is associated with the more important part of the goyru. Right? Again, when you're making a lottery, there's kind of two parts to the lottery. First, you put down the lots. You have all of the different lots and you place it. You put it down into the box or into the container or whatever that you're using. And then you pick up. You pick up one of the lots. The more important, the most relevant part of the lottery is when you pick up the lot. So this expression of tala, of lifting up, is would seem to be a much more appropriate expression to use when referring to a goyro, being that A, it was already used in the Torah, and B, this is the more important part of the lottery. So the Rashi gives his first explanation. Why do we need the words tipa lachem? Oh, because of the goyru. Because the land is divided through a goyru. But it's still not a sufficient explanation. We still can kind of question this usage, this term. Why does the Torah still have to use the words tipa lachem? Maybe it should say tala lachem. It's still not a sufficient explanation. And that's why Rashi brings his second opinion from the Medrash regarding how Hashem made the malachim, the sarim, of the seven nations of Canaan. He made them fall and bow before Moshe to indicate that they had lost their power. Because this medrash really explains very well, it explains very nicely the word tipa lachem. Right? There is no, according to this medrash, there is no better expression to use to describe how these malachim fell before Moshe. It's a very, very appropriate word based on this medrash. So, and that's why Rashi does not suffice with the first explanation about the goyro, and instead chooses to bring a second explanation, the explanation of the medrash. Okay, so then you can ask, why does Rashi need the first explanation? Right, if the medrash fits so nicely and fits so perfectly, this expression of falling, this expression of tipa lachem, then why does Rashi need the first explanation? And the Rebbe explains the second explanation also has its flaws and is much more distant from the actual pshat of the pasuk. Because first of all, aside from the fact that you don't see any hint to this whole idea, you don't see this whole concept of the sarim, of these malachim falling before Moshe, it's not written anywhere in Torah, it's not really hinted out anywhere in Torah. Aside from that, it doesn't really fit with the very specific word, with the specific wording that the pasuk uses over here. The pasuk says, Zois ha'oretz asher tipa lechem. This is the land that will fall to you. In other words, the expression of tipol, this expression of falling, is in reference to the oretz, to the land. In the medrash, though, the expression of falling, of tipol, is in reference to the angels and not to the land. Also, in the pasuk it says tipa lachem, which means it will fall to you. This land will fall to you, meaning in the future, in future tense. Whereas in the medrash is describing something that happened, that already happened, that Hashem already made, right, in the past. As this has already happened, Hashem had already made these angels fall and bow before Moshe. So even though, yes, the medrash explains the general expression of falling very nicely, according to this medrash, the general idea of nefila would certainly fit very well. It doesn't quite, first of all, you don't see this hinted, you don't see this idea written anywhere in the Torah. And also, it doesn't really fit grammatically into the pasuk. And that's why Rashi brings this explanation second. So until now, we've explained, we've had this Rashi Sicha, and we've explained two Rashis in Parshas Maaseh. The Rebbe brought down two Rashis, he asked several questions on those Rashis, and we've explained it. So we've gone through all of the questions and all of the answers. In Ois Vav, the Rebbe explains the Yena Shel Torah in this Rashi. Right? Every Rashi, the Rashis are basically deceptively simple. Right? At first glance, Rashi's just explaining to us the simple, basic meaning of the Pshat of the of the words of the words in the Torah, but Rashi also Rashi's explanation also includes Yeno Shel Torah. That there's many secrets of the Torah that are hinted out to in the words of Rashi. And in Rashi Sichas, the Rebbe explains to us all of these secrets and the beautiful ideas that are hinted out to in this Rashi. And the Rebbe says, right, you have the Torah says, Zaysa Aras Asher Tifalachem, this is the land that will fall to you. And in Hasidus, sometimes Aretz can be a reference to, Aretz is a hint to, the word Aretz or land is a hint to Knesset Yisrael, is a hint to the Jewish people or the Jewish souls. So when it comes to the Aretz, in reference to the Jewish souls, a tipa lachem, they fall. Every time a neshama comes down into the world, every time a Jewish person is born, the neshama has fallen. It was a great descent and a great fall for the neshama. The expression that's used in Kabbalah is that the neshama falls me'igra ramah from a very high hilltop levira mikta to a very deep pit. So it's this massive fall or descent of the neshama. It's actually basically traumatic for the neshama to have to enter this world and come into a body. And so you can ask, why does this need to happen? Why does Hashem do this? Why does Hashem make the neshama fall such a great fall? That's why Rashi explains on the words Zoysa Aris Asher Tipa Lachem, he explains, why does the neshama need to fall? Why does the neshama need to descend? He says, Lefi shahar b'mitzvos noya goyis ba'oretz chulu. Because of mitzvos, the neshama falls and descends into this world because there are many mitzvos that apply in this world. Only in this land, only in the physical earth, can a neshama fulfill mitzvos. And through fulfilling mitzvos, the neshama isn't only refining the body and the nefesh Bahamas, but the neshama actually elevates itself. The neshama can reach a much greater level than it had through fulfillment of mitzvahs. The neshama reaches a much greater, higher level than it was at even before it came down into this world. And then the Rebbe says, okay, based on this, you can ask, if this is such a great accomplishment, right, through the neshama coming down into a body, it can elevate not only the guf and the nefesh bahamis, but even the neshama itself attains much, much greater heights, then why do we call it a nefila? Why do we say tipa lachem? How can we use this expression of falling and of nefila in reference to the neshama that actually is reaching such a high level? And Rashi explains, why do we use the expression of tipa lachem? Rashi hints out, he says, al shem sheneschalka oretz begoyru, nikris chaluka lashen nefila. Says this nefila, this falling is associated, we use this term, it's associated with the concept of goyru. Meaning, firstly, the neshama does fall, and it needs to fall. It needs to fall to a much to a low place, into a much lower level. It falls to a much lower level, and it needs this in order to attain the level of goyru. What does this mean? Firstly, the Rebbe brings down what is explained in Tanya, that when the neshama, neshama down here in this world, that neshama that's in a body is always, no matter, even if we're talking about a Jew that's on a very high level and somebody who always does the right thing, always Torah mitzvah, somebody, even a very, very great tzaddik, the ava and yira, the love and fear of Hashem that a tzaddik has or that a Jew has when the neshama is vested within a body is still incomparable to the level of avas Hashem and yiras Hashem, to the love and fear of Hashem that the neshama had when it was before it came down into the world. So yes, when the neshama comes down into the world, it is a nefila. It's certainly a descent. It's certainly a fall. It's falling to a much, much lower level. You cannot compare, right? It's not, even the ava and yira that it reaches, you can't compare it. It's a much, much lower level. But through this fall, and it's only through this fall that the neshama can reach a greater height, can reach the level of goyru. Meaning, because the neshama is kind of in a much lower place, and because the neshama is on a lower level, because the neshama feels very distant from Hashem, and the neshama doesn't perceive Elikus as it did beforehand, or as on the same level that it did beforehand, it's only through this that a Jew, that somebody can serve Hashem on a deeper, in a deeper way. A person can serve Hashem on the level of Goyru. What does it mean to serve Hashem on the level of Goyru? Serving Hashem on the level of Goyru means to serve Hashem in a way that transcends your, that transcends logic, and the way that transcends reason. When it comes to a lottery, when you make an actual goyru, a goyru is something that is above logic and above reason. Meaning, you're making it, it's not like a regular decision. When it comes to different decisions in a person's life, they usually use their mind. They use their logic to make a decision. You have a few different choices. You think about the choices. You figure out the pros, the cons of each choice, and you use your brain and you use your logic to decide what is the best choice, or what's the best choice for, what's the best choice for you, right? So when you decide what you want, when you decide, well, you usually decide, usually use your reason, you usually use your logic. And when you do a goyru, when you do a lottery, that's something that transcends logic. You're not deciding, you're not making a decision based on a logical explanation or based on your own reasoning. The decision, right, the goyru, you're making a decision from, it's coming from someplace higher. And so a goyru is something that is above logic and something that transcends reason. And when it comes to a Jew's avodah, there's different levels. You can serve Hashem in a way that you, when you're using you can serve Hashem in a way that uses your logic, meaning that you think about, you can try to think about Hashem's greatness, and in that way you appreciate everything that Hashem gives you. You love Hashem, you respect Hashem, you have a fear of heaven, right? That's one level of serving Hashem through using your mind, but there is a higher level of serving Hashem, which is not because you're not serving Hashem because it makes sense. You're not serving Hashem because it's going to necessarily benefit you in any way. It's not because of a logical calculation or a logical decision that you made. It's just because that's who you are. But on a deeper level, there's a part of your neshama that is above reason, that's above logic, that just wants to be connected to Hashem no matter what, even if maybe it's not so convenient, even if it's not convenient, even if it doesn't feel good, even if perhaps you won't benefit from it, this is just who you are. This is the essence of the neshama, that just wants to be connected to Hashem no matter what, and that in a way that defies reason. That's what we call the goyru of the neshama. So the Rebbe explains that through that, you have the Rashi saying, why do we use the lashon of tipol, of nefila, when it comes to the neshama? Because of the goyru, meaning the neshama does fall. Yes, it does. When it comes down into the world, it's a much lower level. The ava, the yira, it doesn't perceive godliness. At least not in the way that it did beforehand. It's a much lower level of avon yira. The neshama is much more distant from Hashem than it was before, in a certain sense. And it's because of this distance that a Jew can tap into its deeper reservoirs. A Jew can tap into the essence of neshama and serve Hashem in a way that is above reason, and serve Hashem on this level of goyru. And that's where Rashi ends off. Rashi brings the second explanation of the Medrash, which says how Hashem took all of the sarim, the angels of the seven nations of Canaan, and made them bow before Moshe. The Rebbe says we can learn a lesson from here, that when a Jew, right, he falls, he comes down, the neshama comes down into this world. Why? In order to fulfill mitzvahs. So when a Jew fulfills mitzvahs and he serves Hashem in a way of goyru, meaning in a way that goes above, that defies logic and transcends any explanations, when a Jew serves Hashem in this way, then Hashem makes all of the sarim, or all the nations of the world, makes them bow before you, meaning Hashem will remove any obstacles or any difficulties that may be in your way, and then it makes it much easier for you to really transform your own, for you to transform wherever it is that you live, into a place that is on the level of Eretz Yisrael.